Hey there, and welcome to the Smart and Simple Matters show with your host, Joel Zeslovsky. This one's for us folks who have been on a crash, recover cycle and feel like they have had enough or never want to be there again. This is episode number 102. Woomp, estamos aquí, amigo. That means woomp, here we are, friend, in Espanol. And here we are again, indeed. I'm producing another episode for your wonderful brain, and you're creating the time and attention to benefit from it. Nice, huh? It's a good thing we have going, so let's keep it continuing. You'll have to excuse me. I'm kind of in a boom, boom, boom mode right now because I want to make sure I don't take too long before I get you to hear some wisdom from my groovy guest. First of all, this episode is brought to you by my voice and Patreon supporters. I don't have sponsors. I love it that way. I just have you. So consider showing your support for me, this show, and our community at joelzeslovsky.com/support. Second of all, here is an extra dose of love to Lady Lars on iTunes, who recently wrote this review of the show. Joel sounds like one of those people who is relentlessly positive, and that is why I truly enjoy this podcast. Sometimes it's easy to get in a downward spiral of thinking about your life and others in only one way, but Joel's enthusiastic and intentional delivery always cheers me up and gets me thinking about things in new and different ways. Enthusiastic and intentional, that's a great combo, and I received that, Lady Lars. And like all my shout-outs, I eagerly and gratefully shared your words in the show notes for this episode at joelzeslovsky.com/SASM102. And now I bet we can help other people realize that powerful, enthusiastic, and intentional combo, eh? Now, fortunately, my guest for this episode, Christine Walker, who I heard in a Slow Home podcast episode, and I just knew I wanted to have her on Smart and Simple Matters as well. She combined some serious zing with some deliberate bada bing, baby. Oh, you're about to hear all kinds of niftiness from her, like why going fast is addictive in our brains and our culture. What to do when your mindfulness muscles are weak. I'm flexing mine right now. Can you feel them? Flex yours too. Are they strong? If not, this is going to help. We'll also talk about a surprising way to get off the to-do list treadmill and even some science, like the differences between breathing with your belly versus your chest. So let's pump up the jam for the next, 45 minutes and flex those mindfulness muscles in your head. Here we go. Rabbit trails. I think we're about to go down rabbit trails. Will I? That was silly. Yes, I know. Will I and my gracious guest, Christine Walker, a physical therapist and professional yoga therapist with her own practice in Charlotte, North Carolina, are we going to talk about downward facing dog first? Maybe sports in North Carolina? Or are we going to explore why she primarily works with youth athletes and active adults, providing a highly personalized and integrative approach to rehab, yoga, and sports training? Or will we end up talking about our own kids more? I don't know, but I'm starting to think, are we going to talk about personal meditation practices or what we're doing to have more nothing in our lives? I don't know. Christine doesn't know. You don't know, but I do know this. Christine, I am stoked to have you join me for chat.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, hey, what do you say? Let's start where I normally start a conversation with something I call the seeds of awesomeness. I want to help people understand how you came to be the person you are today. If you could, Can you tell us something unique about your environment as a youth, or maybe a crucial experience you had growing up that had a big impact on current you?
Well, there are so many different factors. It's almost hard to choose one, I guess. I feel like as a youth, I was that hyperactive, go, focused on productivity kid, which, you know, had its benefits, I realize now, but also was unsustainable for me. And that really has shaped who I've become now as an adult, kind of coming to terms with that person who I was as a youth, and also accepting that it some of those characteristics actually have benefit for me. I just remember people always saying that, you know, I never stopped moving. and that's probably true. I was very active. I was involved in highly competitive soccer growing up and loved doing it, loved being active, loved being outside, but was also just hyper-focused on always doing something. The idea of sitting still and doing nothing pretty much scared the living daylights out of me. And that really continued until I was an adult, until I had my first child a couple, almost 3 years ago, and realized that this lifestyle wasn't going to keep working for me. And if anything, I pretty much found that by hitting rock bottom. So that is really, I think my active childhood is really probably the biggest thing of my past that's shaped where I've come and where I am today.
What were some of the challenges? You talked about pros and cons, some mm-hmm. characteristics of your perhaps hyperactive youth being good. Like on the soccer field, I want you playing soccer on my team. If you're constantly in motion and you're not lollygagging and you're always engaged, that is amazing. But I would imagine if you're, I think I heard you talk about somewhere else, there was some trip that you took to some integrated medicine school in high school. They were doing some kind of yoga training and you were reading some books about yoga.
That was an idea that was like appealing to me in high school, but yet at the same time, it was something I couldn't even relate to at that time. It was like, huh, this seems interesting. This seems different. You mean people don't all live like me, just going all the time? And when I say going all the time, like the craziest example I can think of is I felt guilty if when I was heating something up in the microwave, if I hit 230 instead of hitting 233, because 233 is way more efficient and I must be efficient in everything I do. I mean, we're talking like, it's a little obsessive, I guess. I mean, it's very controlling of my life just to try to be that active. So yeah, when I was in high school, Duke Integrative Medicine opened up and my mom took me to visit. They were doing tours because back then that was a big deal. Integrative medicine wasn't really even a catchphrase yet. The fact that they were doing traditional Western medicine under the same roof as yoga and massage and acupuncture was pretty novel. So we went and visited, and that was part of what started to spark my interest in, things can be done differently, whether that's our healthcare system and the way we treat patients, which for me as a physical therapist is something I think about a lot, or whether that's, you know, how I take care of myself, like, and how I spend my time. It just presented a whole nother way of life that I hadn't really thought much about. Or, you know, as a kid, you're so self-focused, you don't even realize exists. You just think everybody's like you, honestly. So
two things here. Well, first one, the microwave thing of hitting 233 instead of 230 to save a nanosecond of your lifetime, and you can rededicate that to something else. I heard Courtney Carver and I did a webinar last year about the busy boycott, and she was relating the story about a woman who did 111 on the microwave instead of 100 to save that split second of time. I almost thought, I was like, come on. Really?
Uh-huh.
Not that I'm judging here, but I thought that was almost like a myth where people were telling this story as a microcosm of the busyness of the constantly going that we have. You have experienced that firsthand.
I have experienced it firsthand. I mean, I honestly, even if I go to the microwave today, I sit there and I have to say to myself, no, you're going to hit every last number for the exact time you want because it, you know, it's okay. It is okay. You have the time and you do not have to live like this. I mean, I think that's really what I say to myself is you don't have to live like this anymore. Because it becomes, I would say that speed, and you see it in our modern day life right now, even that speed and that productivity, it's addictive. And we know it's addictive on like a chemical level in our brain too. We get to that pace and kind of gets our fight or flight system going. And that sensation can feel good. And if we activate that too often, then our body just craves that all the time. So it's been hard. It almost feels like you're recovering from a, you know, internal addiction with your own brain. It's not something external, but it's more controlling, I think, than some people realize.
But it is external to some extent too, because although you were very self-focused growing up, I was too. I think most people in Western culture are. You mentioned before that you didn't see anyone else living a different way. Like you thought you weren't an anomaly growing up, constantly going, not being able to stay still, always being productive. And I'm sure you were surrounded by other people who were like that, maybe even family members or friends. So it's not like you were a total outlier. This is just is partially a cultural thing and also an internal thing that we need to reconcile in ourselves too. One thing that I'm curious about is how did you make that shift? You said you don't have to live like this, and it would be good to understand a little bit better. Like, what does it feel like when you're living like this? How did you transition from that person into the kind of person that you are now? How does your normal this feel different than the former this?
Well, a lot of that starts with the birth of my daughter, and it actually kind of started before because I was unfortunately on 13 weeks of bed rest with her before giving birth. So when you think about the person I described, the one who can't even sit still or type, you know, 230 into the microwave, now being asked to lay on the couch all day for 13 weeks is a dramatic lifestyle change. So I would say that's where it started. Now, I actually, considering, I kind of thought, oh, this is going to be a 13 weeks of down and out, and then my daughter will come, and then I'll just be so itching to go again that I'll be back to my normal self. You know, that was really where my brain was during that time, which, of course, it was scary not knowing if she would come early, and there was just a lot of emotions behind all that. But it also, I mean, it did a lot to me, both mentally and physically, that I didn't even realize at the time. And so then after she came, of course, being a first-time parent, you're just, the learning curve is so steep and you have to figure it out really fast. I mean, I was so overwhelmed. And not to mention my body was just so weak and exhausted, not just from laboring and having a baby, but because I didn't do anything for 3 months leading up to having a baby. You know, I went from being this athletic, in shape person to I can't even walk around the block. I'm just like going to fall over. I'm just so tired. And then on top of that, you add the fatigue of being up and feeding your baby all night. And a lot of that being dependent on the mom. If you choose to breastfeed, then that's just a whole lot of extra stress, and I just did not handle it very well, honestly.
How did you handle it? I mean, it didn't sound like you, at that point in time, you hadn't instilled a personal yoga practice yet. I don't think.
No.
We'll talk a little bit more, I hope, about mindfulness and meditation, how you conceive of it, how you practice it. So you didn't have any of these things. So you wake up, assuming that there's probably at 2 hours between the last time that you slept, because those kids, especially
pretty much
when first start. What was your day feel like in terms of going? Did you feel like a robot going through the motions, like you were just on the automated cycle?
I'm not even sure I was automated at this point. I mean, for months I was probably needing outside help and other people to still help me just make it through the day. It was a tough time postpartum, very difficult, and pretty much with me, I mean, not functioning as a person. So
Did you know? Did you know that you were eventually. Non-functional, or was it your husband or your friends who pointed out, like, hey, Christine?
My dad and husband.
So you didn't even know that this was, at least not to the full extent, that this was going
no.
on. Somebody had to point it out to you, like, you might need to practice some self-care right now.
We might need some help. Yeah, exactly. I'm a healthcare professional. It's not like I'm not aware of all of these things and signs and symptoms, but when it comes to yourself, it's a totally different ball game. So my dad and husband both in the same weekend looked at me and was like, this is not right. This is not normal. We got to do something about this. And so that's really when I started to rebuild my life and rebuild it in a different way than where it was before. I think I always kind of knew that the fast-paced life that I was living before wasn't exactly what I wanted, but I didn't know how to do anything different. And I didn't have things like yoga or meditation that I was pursuing at that point. I mean, I definitely had my faith and my religion, and that was huge. That was probably the only reason I made it through it all. But I didn't have other ways of learning how to take care of myself and what that meant. I didn't have the practical self skills for that. That's when I really started to realize, and all those nights late breastfeeding actually is when I kind of came upon the Simple Living community and minimalism and just every name you can throw out there somewhat related to slowing your lifestyle down. And luckily, thanks to the internet and blogs and podcasts, there's so much more out there these days that you can learn, there are other ways to handle like life stress and just other ways of living to make things easier. So that's when I really kind of came upon the whole Simple Living movement. And I started going to a great Christian counselor. And that was a huge step for me in really learning I didn't have to live life this way. When I say that, she's really the one that helped me learn that. In the midst of all that, and in the midst of me kind of finding myself again, I started looking into yoga and meditation at her recommendation. And I remember the day where she looked at me and she goes, your mindfulness muscles are just so weak. And I'm a physical therapist. So, you say muscles weak, like, okay, I get that. That's what I do all day. I train people's muscles, right? So that just really clicked with me. And so I started looking into, well, what do I do to make them stronger? Like, I know, I'm an athlete. I get it. You're weak in something. You want to get better. You train. So how do I train this? And that's when I ended up using Headspace, which I love, because I felt like it pretty much held my hand, this girl who could not sit down for more than a couple seconds by herself and sit still. It held my hand and really said, here's how you do it. Here's how you can train, and train your mindfulness muscles, basically. And I know there's so many apps out there that are fantastic. And
Headspace is a great one to start with. Andy
Puddicombe. But it's so good.
I actually had a chat with him, episode 40 of the show. He and I talked for about an hour about Headspace and the themes around it. And as I was talking with him, I'm like, Andy, I just feel so soothed right now. I just feel so calm. He just has that presence. I recommended Headspace to a number of folks who are just getting started. I personally like Insight Timer. I like, I'm not really into guided meditation as a regular thing. I'm more into bells and intervals and trying to lengthen the gap between the bells to bring me back because the mind wanders, and that's fine.
Yeah.
So yeah, Headspace is a great place to start. And okay, so let's keep going as far as meditation goes.
Sure.
You've got a funny story. You don't have to recount it about the first time you meditated and what happened. Apparently Andy put you to sleep, right?
For several hours.
Okay. You were so exhausted that you couldn't get through 10 minutes of Andy talking and your body just had to shut down.
Pretty much. Okay. Yeah.
But part of
and
it
I
is,
know Andy says don't let yourself fall asleep, but Andy, some people, I think if you fall asleep, apparently your body just needed it. So that's my stance.
So you got this Christian counselor who gave you permission to think about things differently, to slow down, and then at at 2 a.m. breastfeeding sessions, or whether it's, you know, just during the course of the day, you were listening to a podcast episode or reading a blog post or however what it is, how did you give yourself permission to finally slow down?
That's a good question. Cause I think to some degree, that has always been my struggle. Everybody else will give me the permission, but really it comes down to feeling okay with the decision yourself. I mean, that's years of counseling work, honestly. I just really found that I am by far my toughest critic, and I'm the one that holds myself to these crazy standards of being active or just being productive. And I think the biggest thing that helped me get permission was the realization of how much better my body felt when I actually did give myself this time. And it took, you know, when I first started making life changes to give myself more time, I mean, I was still very resistant. I mean, I didn't fully buy on and really, I did it because I was being told to do it basically by people who I really trusted. And so I said, okay, I'm going to trust you guys and give this a try. But once I started to slow down and take that time to meditate, even with the meditation, I almost feel my body like craving, when are you going to meditate today? You know, it gets to the point where you just realize how good it is for you, and then how it's not just for you. I think Andy talks about this a lot in Headspace, but it's also for the people around you. Like, you taking this time for yourself actually benefits others.
Yeah.
And realizing that it's not as selfish as maybe you make it sound in your head. And if it benefits others and your relationships with others and your ability to connect with them when you are with them, you start to see all the positive benefits. And that's what made me be able to give myself permission, is realizing how much better this made not only my life, but also my life with everybody else too. Cause that's more my focus. I mean, I'm a mom. I'd rather, of course, like sacrifice everything I'm doing to make sure everybody else is happy. But then, you know, if mommy's not happy, then everything's kind of a disaster anyway too. So it's like, yeah. I mean, it kind of comes back to that old saying, but you got to keep mommy happy. But it's not just mommy, it's everybody. I think really that was the turning point for me when I really started to see the benefits.
What are the benefits? Slowing down. When you do your 20 minutes of meditation a day, maybe there's days where you don't get it in, or you get it in much later than you anticipate. What does your mindfulness practice, does it allow you to feel that you can't do or feel without it?
I definitely, kind of like you feel when you're talking to Andy, I just feel a much better sense of calm and ability to handle decision making, handle the daily tasks that need to be done, like have the energy to do the things that need to be done. I'm also I'm better at prioritizing, honestly, what's important, and letting go what's not. And I think that's huge. You know, it's funny. Something I've been thinking about lately is that how my to-do list, the idea of a to-do list, has kind of disappeared for me. I used to be very much like, if I didn't write it down, it wasn't going to happen because my brain wasn't going to remember, et cetera. And it's not that I never have a to-do list. I mean, don't get me wrong. I still make a grocery store list because there's no way I'd get in there and remember everything off the top of my head. But I don't like wake up daily with like all these objectives that I feel like I have to finish and do. And if I don't, then it's been a failure. It's definitely helped me reprioritize daily life and also just be more aware of what does need to happen and what's important. And therefore I don't need a list for it because I've just realized that lately, that I've stopped making lists.
Wow. So. That's a huge turnaround. I'm curious. I'm somebody who's highly organized. It's probably a generous way of saying it. And I'm somebody, I don't really have to-do lists, but everything in my Google Calendar, I do it unless something crazy happens. Like on Sunday night, I have my hour-long practice of mapping out my entire week. And I know most people can't do that. They don't have the kind of predictability that I do.
Yeah.
Work schedule. And that's just like a lot of people are thinking, Joel, that would be awesome. But no, that's not my life, dude. How do you know whether you were productive or whether you were successful that day without your list?
I think that's been the biggest thing. Is it's not that I don't have a calendar. I mean, I have a calendar. I schedule patients. I have to know who's coming when. But it's like I don't have a daily I'm not even sure how to describe it, but I guess the question is more about productivity. And so, you know, I think I've also learned I need to detach, like, whether or not I deem a day successful or good from what I've done during the day. Like, that doesn't, realizing that my worth doesn't come from that and resting in that and really resting and knowing that every day is good, really. I mean, and just looking at things more as a blessing and just thankful for what I was able to do that day rather than trying to judge it on, I got so much of this off my list done today. I think that's really been my biggest mind shift in that. And that definitely doesn't probably work for all people. And honestly, it wasn't an intentional change. It's just something I've observed, particularly the past 6 months, and started thinking about that, noticing how that's changed for me personally. So
I've noticed that the more intentional we get at our lives, this is a sweeping generalization here, but the more intentional we get in our lives, the unintentional things, the byproducts, mm-hmm. those tend to have better outcomes. Mm-hmm. More aligned with our values, the spirit, the kind of energy that we want to put into the world, the way that we want to help people. So once we get the core things down, whether it's in our family life, in our community life, in our work life, spirituality, whatever it is, we make these core decisions. I am this kind of a person. I do these kinds of things. All the other stuff that doesn't directly fall into those buckets, if you will, tends to just get better. And you realize, I didn't really think about what I was mm-hmm. doing there, but I like that. Like, good job, me. Like, we are doing good here. Yeah.
Exactly. A little self-pat on the back. mm-hmm.
It's important to have that. We were talking before we started recording here about how we, when we're good at something, when we like something that we've done, we're proud of it, we can be humble, but we can own it. And we can say, yeah, you know what? Kind of rock that facilitation that I was doing there. Kind of that my client here was doing upward facing dog and I was instructing him how to do it properly. And next time he came in, I was like, whoa, look at your upward facing dog. Good job you. But hey, I played a role in that too. Good job me. Well, before exactly. I want to talk a little bit about your yoga therapy practice, but since we're still on the topic of meditation, there's one more thing. We both struggle in terms of how do I do that? How do I explain it? One thing that you definitely know how to explain is you have this great blog post. I'm going to link to it in the show notes about your mindfulness moment, spirit meditation. That's an acronym, S-P-R-I-T or S-P-I-T. I-R-I-T? I can
spell sometimes. However spirit's spelled, you know.
Yeah, I can spell sometimes. Just take us into that a little bit, if you would, please.
Sure. That's just something I came up with after practicing for a little while on just and it can be something that you do for 20 minutes if you wanted, but really it was kind of meant to be something just to sort of check in with yourself during the day. And so I just created a simple acronym, and it just so happened SPIRIT, I thought, was actually worked out really well. It just sort of seemed appropriate just to take a mindful moment. And so it's just kind of an alternative to, you know, having something like an app or if you can memorize the word or figure out how to spell it, right? So S just stands for sensation, where you just pause and really take note of all your senses, whether that may be sound, it may be smell, maybe vision. You may want to close your eyes, just seeing how your body feels, and not like trying to change anything, but just taking note. I think we kind of ignore how our body feels. And a lot of my job as a PT and in my own private practice, I really find
physical therapist, PT.
Yes, PT. Okay. Sorry. I'm really working on people's body awareness and position awareness and how they complete movement. So, of course, I think about this in so many different ways, but really this is just S is sensation, kind of become aware of your body. Many people don't realize, oh my gosh, I've been tensing my shoulders all day or something. And thus they just take a point and sense how they feel. The P stands for picture. So if you feel comfortable, you can close your eyes and or just look at some single object. I'm not sure which one you do when you're meditating, but just let your imagination picture you wherever you are or place yourself somewhere else. If you want to picture yourself at the beach or wherever a happy place is, just picture yourself somewhere comfortable. And then eyes, inhale, just to remember to breathe and to start breathing. And I really like how I really like counting with my breath when I first started to learn meditation, because that helped me focus. And I was shocked even how quickly my mind would wander when just trying to count to 10. So I would do in and out to the count of 10. And if you, you get distracted, you just start over. Don't worry about it.
What about holding? Are you holding in between? So you take big inhale and then hold and then big exhale, or you're just in and out?
Honestly, I usually just go for a good abdominal breath in and out, using letting your belly expand and trying to keep your chest quiet. I like holding. I do that sometimes too. But especially for people who haven't really tried or really thought about their breath at all, making sure that they can belly breathe is really the first step in any form of breath work or practice.
Is there a physiological difference between belly breath versus chest breath in terms of, yeah?
There is.
See, I love this. Like, you know the emotional benefits of it too, but you also have the academic and scientific and intellectual side too. Okay, tell me about that a little bit, please.
So just to keep it simple, basically breathing down through your belly really helps deactivate your fight or flight system, okay? So when we're breathing up through our chest, that's actually way more shallow, and it can increase heart rate and actually increase blood pressure, et cetera. And breathing down through your belly does the opposite. It has a calming effect on the body. There's some really cool articles I can kind of link to if you would like me to send, talking about.
Give me one. I'll put it in the show notes, or two.
Yeah, sure. I can send you some, talking about the vagus nerve, which is a really important nerve that starts up in your head. It's one of your cranial nerves. And it plays a big role in turning off our fight or flight system and to really calming down our body. So the breathing is one of the ways you can stimulate that nerve. And we really want you to do those nice deep abdominal breaths to help stimulate that. So
cool.
That's kind of the simple scientific version.
All right. People will go deeper if they want. I'll have links to good stuff in the show. So we have S for sensation, P for picture, I for inhale, R for
release. So this is when I go back over and kind of scan my body head to toe and say, okay, what's tight? What do I need to just say, let go? I mean, a lot of times I'll notice as a PT, you know, people just hold their stress in certain places. So for some people, that may be their shoulders or their hands. They clench their hands a lot. Maybe your jaw. Maybe you grind your teeth during the day. You don't even realize it. Or you cross your legs a lot. And that's actually more of a trying to cope with stress position than maybe just to do it. You're actually maybe tight. It can be for some people. So you're crossing your legs and really like kind of tightening down everything. Yeah, that might be a way you're trying to actually deal with stress more so. That may be where you're holding it. And I see that a lot. And you know, especially headache, neck, shoulder pain patients even back pain patients that I deal with. It's always very interesting to kind of see what areas continuously get tight. And there's a, you know, as a PT, I'm looking at them as though the muscles are tight or they're upset. But there's also very much an emotional component to that too, that I really try to tap into and kind of find out, you know, when are these positions, you know, really aggravating these muscles? What else is going on then? What's going on in your daily life that's causing you to be in these positions, et cetera? So sorry, that's a little digress, but
that's great.
But yeah, so that's one of the ways I'm like, I think I'm different than like your average PT on the block, because I'm really looking at how does all this fit in together. It's not just, oh, your muscles are tight, let's treat your tight muscles. But part of treating your tight muscles might be talking about, are you having a lot of stress at night, you know, when this is happening, or and other things that are going on. There are other factors that play into why our muscles and joints don't feel good. So
I have a personal question for you if we get to it on that note.
Okay.
But let's keep going on spirit. So we've got R for release, I for...
Yeah, so release your muscle tension. I is for intention, really, just to take a moment. And this one, something Andy talks a lot about too, that you want to just remind yourself why you're doing this. Why are you taking this moment? Like, you know, are you taking it because you felt yourself getting irritated and stressed and you just needed a timeout? Did you, you know, are you hoping to be more calm, have that difficult conversation with somebody later, or are you a little moment of peace? I mean, it doesn't matter why you're doing it. Just taking a moment and asking yourself why. And then T is the thanks part. And I just really believe in, you know, what Christ said about giving thanks in all things. And I think we should be thankful no matter what our religious beliefs are, you know, for a moment to pause in this busy life and stressful life and to just take, even if it was a 5-second moment or if you got a full 30 minutes in the bathtub, whatever it was, the act of acknowledging and giving thanks is still so powerful and helps just put your heart in a place of gratitude. And I think going forward throughout your day, that's just going to help kind of recenter and refocus on what's important. And you're just thankful, hey, I got a moment to just pause today. That's great.
Yeah.
That's the little acronym I use just when I need to just take a little pause. Like I said, it usually actually isn't during like my 20-minute meditation time. That's like I'm feeling stressed. I need a moment.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing is this, if you don't have 20 minutes, you could cycle through this in a minute.
Maybe oh, absolutely.
Maybe you can do this in 30 seconds. You don't, absolutely. It's just a moment. Scientifically, a moment is 3 seconds, according to Daniel Kahneman.
Okay,
I don't know why
well.
I remember that. We have 600 million moments in the average lifespan. Can we take one? Can we take one of those 600 million moments, just chill the heck out, and take a spirit moment? I like
exactly.
it. That's a good challenge for myself and for other people to think about is, yeah, you know what? I've got a moment. Actually, I think I have 5 moments. Maybe,
yeah.
Maybe I even have 20. How about that?
Amazing.
Yeah. Okay, I want to get back to real quick. You were talking about the assessment and your physical therapy practice and your mindset. I want to go through a brief little case study so that people can understand just how you are very different from, I've gone and I've had family members go to physical therapists. They're wonderful people. They do wonderful work, but you're right. You do think and practice things very differently than at least mm-hmm. here in America, what we would typically think of as the domain of a physical therapist. So let's say I come to you and I tell you that my right calf is often sore, which it is, particularly after standing for 30 minutes or more at my standing desk at home, which I've been doing for the last 50 minutes or so talking to you. That's it. That's all I know. Like, I don't have any more self-awareness about my triggers or how long it's been going on. Mm-hmm. Where would you guide me from there?
So usually, you're right, when you say self-awareness, usually that's my first step is if I have, especially if I obviously have patient's fault paperwork where it's a little unique in the sense that I ask the basic, I keep it simple, but I ask the basic things that you would expect on there, but then I also ask, you know, about you know, dietary habits and sleep habits and activity habits. And I ask some other lifestyle questions that you probably typically don't see on a regular physical therapy evaluation. They're not too invasive. It's funny how some people though will be like, why are you even asking me this? And that's when I know we've kind of got to start back and say, hey, all these things are way more connected than people attribute to. And unfortunately, our healthcare system is so fractionated that you're usually relegated to multiple people when a lot of our problems are way more interrelated than we give them credit for. So,
what's one of those questions? The more holistic approach.
So like, I will definitely ask like, to list out your, you know, what you eat in a day. You know, what are your religious preferences? What are even your music preferences? Things that are going to just give me a little idea on how you tick. And then usually I'll talk, I don't ask on the questionnaire, but usually we'll talk some about stress and stressors and sleep habits and definitely sleep position and a lot of movement-focused questions, but they still relate. I mean, if somebody is not sleeping well, I mean, we've got a much higher chance of seeing pain throughout the day than if they're sleeping really well. So it matters. It matters. I'm not a sleep expert by any means, but I need to know if your sleep's not going well.
Yeah.
And well, sometimes if it's a positional issue, then I can help with that. So
this is somewhat related from what I understand, and tell me if I'm understanding it wrong. So in your professional yoga therapist program,
mm-hmm.
so the physical realm, how I'm sleeping. I mean, when I'm sleeping, I can't be mindful. I'm not eating. There's not a lot of other things that I'm doing activity-wise that are going to deteriorate how I function during the day. But the physical realm was only one of the 5 elements of yoga in the professional
right.
yoga therapist program. Can you just briefly touch on the other 4, this more holistic approach?
Yeah, sure. So I guess just to give a kind of little background on the program in general, the program is for healthcare professionals only. So it's the only yoga training program in the world that only trains healthcare professionals. So unlike a traditional, you know, there's even something called yoga therapy, which is not by healthcare professionals. It's a kind of a big battle of terminology right now. But professional yoga therapists are actually licensed healthcare providers. So they've gone to school for a healthcare degree and are now also trained to approach everything from a yoga perspective. So we, in the program, have five areas that we look at that my instructor calls the Pentagon of Wellness. One of them is the physical, so that would be like your yoga postures, or in my physical therapy case, whether I'm teaching someone yoga postures or a combination of yoga postures and a more traditional exercise, whatever exercise I'm doing, that would also include like how their sleep is actually going. But there's also the intellectual or self-awareness. So really talking about that's another area. So we're talking about self-awareness, boundaries, and energetic is more usually focused on kind of the breathing, maybe music, incorporating music as well. Psycho-emotional social is what it sounds like. It talks a little bit more about looking at relationships and nutrition kind of falls under the physical too. But sometimes that relates to the psycho-emotional social as well. Talking about things like maybe anti-inflammatory diets if need be, talking about meditation for forms of stress reduction, you know, encouraging people to also be established, you know, with like a PCP and primary care provider, things like that, that are also going to give them a support system. So it may look like encouraging social outings, or it can be a variety of things. And then also the spiritual is the last finger. And that would really be depending on what the person's spiritual preference are. And that could be anything from as simple as just adding a daily meditation or journal practice to really tapping into their spiritual beliefs and giving them some recommendations if that's something that's really important to them. So it's really pulling everything together, not in the sense of, and also sending them on their way. If somebody needs really intensive nutritional counseling, you know, I'm finding somebody else to help come in and do that. I definitely can give some nutritional recommendations, but I'm not somebody who designs, I'm not trained to design, you know, a full nutrition plan, like here's what you eat every meal, right. You know, but if somebody needs that, then finding them the right provider to do that. But it's very easy to sidestep a lot of those extra pieces in the traditional practice. And unfortunately, in the traditional practice, we don't really have that much time to spend with people. You barely get through just understanding their physical aspect. You don't have time to talk about the rest of it.
There's no wonder. Your timeline to help people would probably be in weeks and months, not in terms of like a near instant, hey, just take this pain pill and whoa, my pain is gone. I wonder when I'm going to have to pop the next pill, because it didn't really address the underlying issue here. I would imagine that makes the pitch to potential clients somewhat difficult in terms of what they're accustomed to just resolving immediately, whatever the physical or emotional discomfort is that they're having, as opposed to doing the work, having long conversations with somebody like you, coming up with a plan and experimenting and failing and trying something different and coming back again. Exactly. I would imagine that's pretty difficult.
It is, but and it's a little different depending on the person, obviously, too. So say with my, I do see a lot of pediatrics and youth athletes. Pediatrics is pretty much my primary focus. And it's different when you're dealing with an underage kid than when you're dealing with an adult, because there's more factors that come into play when you're dealing with somebody who's under 18. There's parents involved, you know, like it's not just you and the patient. So it's going to look different for me talking to them on all these levels. And athletes are actually just different in general from the regular population. And so it, you know, it looks different depending on which of my subset of clients I'm dealing with. But I really try to, for as much as the patient wants me to look at all these areas. And, you know, they have to be also willing to talk about these things. And if they're not, then they're not. But, you know, I definitely make it clear up front. We're gonna talk about it. And if you feel comfortable, and explain to them why this other part of their life may actually be impacting their physical pain. And I think that's the biggest eye opener, is when they start to realize the connection there. I think the easiest one, honestly, to kind of start to introduce people with is really that intellectual and energetic side. So really helping with their body awareness and their self-awareness, and helping them form boundaries on their physical limitations, but then also starting to incorporate some breathing techniques. That's really the easiest place to start with people, honestly. They're more willing to listen to things about that, because it's more easy to explain, hey, you know, if we practice this deep breathing, it's going to help calm your body down, may actually help decrease your pain. You know what I mean? Much easier.
Your stress hormones are going to go down as well, and you won't have to rely on them to get through the day, and then have adrenaline fatigue, and maybe burn out your adrenal glands. And I don't know what I just said. I'm not a medical professional, but I do see associations between just go, 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 stress, 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 like relying on cortisol and other hormones to keep us up and engaged and going, and then you're going to crash.
Right.
Maybe it's not tomorrow. Maybe it's not even this year, but it's going to happen. And this crash, recover cycle, up and down, up and down. I know too many people who are still in that. And I think, settling is the wrong word. Can you adjust? Can you embrace a more even life, a more even head, a more even physical exercise routine? Like that, to me, we all want to have highs. I want them as much as everyone else in terms of achieving something big or having some kind of emotional or spiritual epiphany. But what's my baseline? Can I set my baseline higher so that if I dip below it, I'm still not at the bottom? I'm still up pretty high.
Exactly. I mean, I have patients. It does not surprise me when somebody comes in, they say their pain's gotten worse, and then about 15 minutes later, they'll be like, yeah, I've been really stressed this week. I mean, and they'll start to put it together. But it's very interesting how a lot of times that correlates. And I see that, like, their emotional struggles are manifesting in physical pain. And it's not that, and that doesn't mean that there's not something wrong. Like, that doesn't mean that physically there still isn't an issue, or that their pain's any less real. That's not what I'm saying at all. But there is a correlation. They are joined together rather than two complete separate entities.
Wow. That was deep. Okay, I'm going to give you one more chance to go deep with us here. Is there anything that we did talk about that you would like people to know?
I think your calf pain has hope. How about that?
Yes. Yes.
Although I think I'd probably need to see you a little bit more to give you some more recommendations. But
I will send you pictures.
There's always Skype video, right?
True. How about I just send you a picture of me listening, or a video of me listening to some calming music? I'll be in Birds of Paradise on my right foot. That's a yoga pose for folks who aren't familiar with it. And then you can say, Joel, oh, what are we going to do with you? Okay, buddy. Here's what needs to happen.
Exactly. That is interesting, though. If you're standing, you must not be standing equally. That's definitely the first assumption we can probably make. Okay.
Fortunately, that is pretty much my biggest challenge today, at least. And that's a pretty good one to have. Like you were talking about taking a moment to be grateful, to say thanks. I'm taking a moment right now to think about how amazing it is that you and I got to have a conversation, and I get to share your wisdom with everyone in the world who's going to listen to it, and how any challenges that I have are pretty dang minor in the grand scheme of things, and just keeping that perspective. All right, enough about me. I want this to be about you. For the folks who are really digging what you were talking about and they want to explore your world a little bit more, where would you like them to go?
Sure. Well, I feel like I'm found in a few places. My practice, which is just my name, Christine Walker Physical Therapy, is found at drwalkerpt.com. And I'm also for people who like reading physical therapy things. I'm a contributor to the manualtherapist.com blog, which is a fantastic physical therapy blog with some really great folks on it. It's been around a while. And so I've written a few posts on there that talks a little more in depth about my use of yoga and my practice, but it is written for clinicians. I mean, patients are welcome to read it and explore it, but it is not written in just simple terms. How about that? But people can look there and see some of my articles. I've also, that meditation post we've been talking about is posted at thesimplemamas.com, and mama is spelled M-A-M-A-S. I have been kind of converting slowly. When I was on bed rest, I started blogging some about my experiences, etc. So if anybody really wants to go back and peruse that, it is on there. The blog used to be called Sofa Mama because that was pretty much what I was doing, laying on the sofa about to be mama all day. So people are welcome to go kind of check that out. That's more of just something I do for fun when I feel like putting projects or things I'm doing or thoughts like meditation up on there. It's way more casual, and they are welcome to visit that. And I think you're going to have a link to that post. So those are places they can find me.
To everything, your Twitter profile, people they will be able to go deeper. And if they happen to be in the North Carolina area and they actually want to stop by, that would be pretty neato as well.
Yep.
Well, Christine, thank you a ton for your time, for your energy that you've given me, that you've given us, and everything else from this episode. I have a feeling this is going to go a long way towards improving people's just general mindset, or getting folks finally started down a path of a slower, simpler, more grateful, more intentional life. The kind of thing that once you stop for a moment and you think about it, I feel it's darn close to universal that we all want. And I'm glad that you and I are continuing to make our journey down that road.
I just hope I can give people, I guess, that hope, because I was the last person who thought that she'd be making these changes. And there is hope for us microwave crazy people. How about that?
Wonderful to know. If nothing else, we can take comfort in that fact.
Exactly.
All right. Well, this was tremendous. Thanks again, Christine. All right. That was certainly fun and insightful. Are you about to plan out how many of your remaining 600 million moments are going towards mindfulness, rest, maybe even listening to this show? Now, I humbly request that you use a few of those moments to say thanks to Christine at drwalkerpt.com, or she's also on Twitter with the same handle, drwalkerpt, Paul Tom. As for links to all the stuff we spoke about, topic timestamps, takeaways, more grooviness, you'll get all of that in the show notes at joelzeslowski.com/SASM102. For those of you who are like, dude, I still don't know how to spell your last name, it's ZASLOFSKY, joelzeslowski.com. There's always some good stuff there. You will also see information in the show notes about how to support me, this show, and our community at joelzeslowski.com/support. I, as always, will happily accept a hey, hi, howdy, how you doing there? On Twitter, my handle is at joelzeslowski, or a note about your experience listening to me chat on this show. You can do that via email. I'm at joel@joelzeslowski.com. That was a lot of Zeslowskis in a short period of time. You know what else, though? When you share this episode, or you just share the show in general with people who you feel will benefit, whether they know how to spell my name or not, whether they've even heard my name or not, whether they know what smart or simple is, if we got a good thing going on here, and I hope we do, don't keep what you and I have a secret. Please, it is tremendous when you tell other folks about what we're building here together. That's it for now. You've just listened to the Smart and Simple Matters podcast with Joel Zeslowski. Now go simplify something, hug someone, or get your sexy spreadsheet on.